How is the Wisconsin dairy industry responding to the shocks of the pandemic? We're checking in on dairy here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The pandemic, it not only triggered a new type of crisis for farmers jolted by global shutdowns and slowdowns, overall uncertainty, it also came at a time when Wisconsin led the nation in 2019 for the number of family farms filing for bankruptcy. Are you a dairy farmer? How is your farm doing? What changes have you had to make due to the pandemic? We're at 800-642-1234. Dairy farmer Sarah Lloyd runs a 400-cow operation, the Nelson Family Dairy Farm near Wisconsin Dells. She's vice president of Columbia County Farmers Union. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, good to be here.
So how is your farm coping in this pandemic? How are things?
Well, my husband and I and his family run the operation, and my husband is out milking cows right now. But, you know, we've been just suffering through very volatile prices. You know, luckily we did not have to dump milk. You heard a lot about different farms in Wisconsin because of the economic shutdown when restaurant and institution cheese and milk consumption just went away overnight. You know, a lot of people got stuck in those supply chains. So it's been stressful, as everyone is having stress from the pandemic. But we're really still having the stress of very volatile prices and a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, what's behind that volatility, the ups and the downs of milk prices? What's going on there?
Well, we are in a broken system, and so we really need to change things. You know, people know that dairy farmers have been having really low prices since about 2015 and a very long extended low price period. That's why you're seeing all the exits and the bankruptcies. And, you know, what's happening is that we have too much milk on the market. Dairy farmers are too good at what they do. We are overproducing. And so when things happen, like export markets get disrupted or supply channels get disrupted, when all the cheese going into restaurants suddenly has no home, that's when we see how brittle and fragile the system is, when we're continually overproducing for the actual demand. And so that's what we really need to dig into, is we have to have a way to create some managed growth program where we can balance the actual supply to the actual demand. That would solve a lot of problems, create stability for farmers in the pricing.
Has your farm customarily been a 400 cow operation, or have you felt pressure to grow as well, to produce more?
Yeah, we are a very typical farm that in 2002 with three families, so my husband, his brother, my in-laws, you know, all trying to make a living off the farm. They were milking about 125 cows in 2002, and then they doubled the herd in order to be able to try to have three families making a living. And so then, you know, that's what kind of happens. You double, you try to see if you can run a little bit faster on this treadmill, try to eke out a little bit more. And now, you know, we're up at 400, and that's not because we made a conscious decision like, I want to milk 400 cows. It was really just because we get these continual low prices and we just run faster to try to eke out survival.
Let's look at exports for a moment. When the trade war hit between the U.S. and China, milk prices, they dropped precipitously. You borrowed to help your operation. What is the current status of exports, and what has that meant for your operation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important for people to think about, like, if I've got had 5 years of low prices, like, I need 5 years of good prices to dig out of the hole, which a lot of farmers like us did, where you take short-term operating loans and you have to consolidate them into longer-term notes. I mean, that's the real risk, is that people have been eating away at their asset base. And so, you know, we've become super dependent on the export markets in the dairy industry. And especially from Wisconsin, this is not a position of stability for me. I feel like this is very risky that we've become so dependent on the export market, because there's one thing I know, I can't control the global markets. And so,
over the years,
we've moved from 4% of total dairy production in the U.S. being exported to like 15%. That's a really huge shift. And that is not a position that we should be in. And it's not the position of strength, especially for Wisconsin.
What are other countries buying from us? Is it the milk itself, or is it variations on the dairy?
Yeah, it's lots of different components. I mean, we do export a lot of cheese. Mexico is a really big importer of U.S. cheese products, among other things. Canada also, we do a lot of trade with Canada. But, you know, China is a big importer of, in that case, these dried milk powders and things that'll be used in ingredients and reconstituted. Obviously, it makes more sense to ship a dried good rather than like a liquid perishable good. But again, those the milk powders are tend to be low value products. And again, for Wisconsin's perspective, we have a wonderful story to tell. We have really high quality goods. We have a distributed system of production with farms across the state. You know, let's really work on adding value to our product rather than just overproducing for this low value market. I just think exports, we really need to reexamine the strategy there. Of course, we're going to have some exports, but let's really look carefully at it.
We have dairy farmer Sarah Lloyd with us as we check in on the state of the dairy industry. Sarah is vice president of the Columbia County Farmers Union. Are you a farmer? How is your farm doing? What changes have you made during the pandemic? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Michelle, who is joining us from Dodgeville this morning. Hi, Michelle. What would you like to add?
Oh, hi. Good morning. I am wondering if, and I know this is a very big question, but if Sarah could shed some light on it or some resources where to get more information. Just the comparison tax and trade between the Obama administration and the Trump administration. I work on a farm, but I've heard several other farmer friends and a farmer in South Dakota that they wanted to give Trump a chance because they wanted him to do something for farmers, and that farmers are happy with what Trump has done. But I'm a little mystified by that. So I'm wondering what was going on in the Obama administration and or what was Trump's saying he could do to change things. And again, just a brief.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. So what has been policy toward farm operations? And what have you felt, Sarah, through federal policy?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we were just talking about exports, and I see, you know, what the Trump did is he said he was going to shake up the trade relations. So he clearly did that. But unfortunately, since we're so dependent on export markets, he basically pulled the rug out from under farmers. And so then the federal government turned around and just started writing checks to farmers. Well, as a farmer, I don't want a check from the government. I want a fair price from the market, but I'm not going to get that unless we have some discipline and we don't continue to overproduce and glut out the market. Now, to the Obama administration, you know, they provided there were price safety nets, which have kind of morphed and continued over time to make sure that when the price really bottoms out, there is some sort of protection for dairy farmers. One thing that really was, I think, a problem in the Obama administration is that Obama came out really strong saying that he was going to deal with another main issue in the ag economy is monopoly power. And the Department of Justice and the Secretary of Ag came around to, there was a hearing in Madison, they were all across different states, and they said they were actually going to take charge and do something about the incredible consolidation and monopoly power in the ag markets. And then they didn't. They backed off, they got scared off by corporations. and powerful interests. And so that to me is a big problem, because those are that's a lingering problem that's really underlying.
And it might also lead to how we view CAFOs, you know, the concentrated animal feeding operations, and, you know, what those large operations mean to small dairy farmers.
Right. I mean, when you get, you know, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 cows, then obviously that individual entity can just push its weight around in the market much more than even I can at 400 cows. And, you know, a lot of people think that we're big. I'm an ant compared to a 10,000 cow dairy. And so, you know, you can look at that kind of the economic impact. You know, here's an example. You know, you want to rent some land that you want to grow alfalfa hay on. Well, these big operations come up and bid up the rental cost. And suddenly land that I may have rented for 20 years is not available to me because they can pay such a high price. So there's little things like that. Plus, then they are just like able to get preferential treatment in the markets because they're moving such a huge volume, both in and then what they buy. They buy in such big volume that they can demand discounts for the prices that they pay, and then that cost gets transferred on to me as a smaller buyer.
We're discussing the dairy industry as the pandemic surges on. Sarah Lloyd manages a 400-cow dairy in Columbia County. Dairy farmers, how has milk production been? How have milk prices affected your operation? Have you had to cut back or dump milk? What do you seek out of the next stimulus plan? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Sarah Lloyd here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with dairy farmer Sarah Lloyd. She runs the Nelson Dairy Farm with 400 cows. Wisconsin still leads the nation in the number of farm bankruptcies this year, despite an infusion of federal aid that has helped some in slowing dairy farm foreclosures in recent years. Sarah, I want to ask you about the federal stimulus. The USDA included dairy in the agriculture disaster assistance package. Trump administration has paid farmers nearly $18 billion in direct payments since June through the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. What are you seeing at the end of the day out of the federal stimulus?
Well, we needed a lifeline, and we need a lifeline until we can get real pricing reform. But we don't want farmers. I don't want a payment from the government. And this goes against all, you know, both parties saying that they want to reduce inefficiencies in government payments. This is a really bad way to do it. Let's fix the underlying issue with pricing. And we can do that by managing the supply to actually match the demand. And that means being able to be nimble. That means critically looking at how dependent we really think we should be on export markets. The CARES and CFAP and all the, you know, stuff that the U.S. government did as a response to COVID, it was really necessary because people are hanging by their fingernails on the edge of the cliff. But that's not a long-term solution.
So you're looking for a more long-term solution to fix the markets and to stop this up and down roller coaster volatility for milk prices.
Right. And, you know, we can have sound policy reform. We do a farm bill in the U.S. every 5 years. That's coming up. We're, you know, we need to start as farmers making our voices heard to our congresspeople, our senators, to our new president, Joe Biden. And we need to say, like, look, fix the problem. Don't keep putting Band-Aids on it. And we know that we can do this. You know, cranberry growers do this. Potato growers do this. Like, this is not something with two heads, the idea that you would actually just balance your supply with your actual demand. It's not a foreign concept.
Let's bring in Ken now in Kansasville. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I had a question for Sarah. I've grown up around agriculture my whole life. I've had a lot of generous farmers offer to allow me to hunt on their land, and a bunch of them were dairy farmers, and they were farms just like you, 400, 300 cows supporting three families, and they have since gone out of business because they couldn't make any money. They are now running nothing but beef, and I've always wondered, what can we do as consumers to help the dairy industry? I've always said I would be happy to pay more for all of our milk and ice cream if I thought the farmers were going to get the money. But one of my neighbors is a milk distributor, and he makes far more money per year than any of the farmers I know. So I don't know what we can do to help the industry.
Ken, thank you for that. Sarah, what would you say there for what consumers can do?
Yeah, thanks, Ken. That is a really important question, because you're right. The farmer share of the consumer dollar is far too little. And so a lot of times, we say, vote with your dollars, or, buy an extra pail of ice cream. Well, that's not fixing the long-term problem, because the retailers, the distributors, the processors, who have all become more and more consolidated and monopolized, they're holding on to more of their fair share of the dollar. And there's plenty of money to go around in the food system where everyone could get a fair price, workers could get fair wages, but that we need federal intervention, we need our state attorney general to intervene and bust up the monopoly power in the sector. So consumers can do things like call their representatives and say, hey, we got to do something about this, because this is like a structural problem. This is not an individual problem of individual farmers having a tough time making it. This is a full-on systems problem.
We're talking with Sarah Lloyd, who manages the Nelson Family Dairy Farm with her spouse, a 400-cow operation, taking your questions and your situation about farming in Wisconsin, dairy farming, 800-642-1234. Owen is a young dairy farmer in Wyawega. Hi, Owen. What is your situation like?
Good morning. My situation is this, and this is what I see. We need to put the risk back in the business of dairy farming, and that's going to have to happen, because we're going to have to demand political accountability. And there's no way farmers can demand political accountability until we fight for a path to legal citizenship of all dairy farm employees, because they represent the business, the industry, and there's no way Congress will ever change the way they're doing things until we know we have a constituency that's behind the American politicians who are making the laws that we have to follow and are dictating the way that we have to perform our business in this economy.
So Owen brings up that, dairy farmers across Wisconsin and the country rely on immigrant labor to keep their operations running. Sarah, can you give us, what are the implications of that labor force?
Yeah, thank you, Owen, for bringing up that issue. It is extremely important. Immigrant labor, in the last time it was kind of counted officially in Wisconsin, and that was 10 years ago, was 40% of the dairy farm labor at that time was immigrant workers. And it is unconscionable that we have not created immigration policy with right to work and, I would say, necessary path to citizenship for workers who are providing the essential labor in this critical ag economy, especially dairy in Wisconsin. So Owen's right. We have to push hard. And really, this should be a bipartisan issue. People across, not just in dairy, but if you look in a lot of industries, are very reliant on immigrant labor. And it's time that we recognize that importance and we treat those workers with the respect that they deserve.
I want to ask you about farm bankruptcies, what you're seeing out there among fellow farmers, because we led the nation last year. Numbers this year, even amid COVID, are not looking good. We're still leading the nation. How is it going with farmers? Are they holding on?
I think you're going to continue to see a lot of exit. You may not see bankruptcies because some people may be able to get out before the ship completely sinks. But you're going to see a lot of exits if we're not seeing a stable higher price. Because again, like I said earlier, if I've had 5 years of low prices and I've dug myself a hole by borrowing money, I need 5 years of good prices to dig out of that. So, you know, unfortunately, people are really struggling. We need to show some longer term solutions like controlling our overproduction that'll help bring the price up and create some stability. You know, we also need to look in Wisconsin at other ways to do things. We need to transform our agriculture. There's some great stuff going on with farmers, connecting with researchers at the University of Wisconsin that I'm involved with. And so, you know, looking at, can we move more into grass-based agriculture? How do we deal with this policy reform? So I just encourage people to get involved. Wisconsin Farmers Union has Dairy Together movement, dairytogether.com. I encourage people to get on board with that and tune in and be part of that conversation to really demand the changes that we need.
We only have a few seconds left, Sarah, but I'm wondering, where do you go on this treadmill? Where do you find hope? Because these are long days, long hours, and you know, those cows need you.
They do. And, you know, I find hope by taking our really great milk and making yogurt and then having a delicious dairy product that I've made myself from start to finish. But, you know, I find hope in the fact that people are coming together. You know, I find hope in the great questions that came into the show today from across the state. People know that we need to really fix the system. So let's all get together and do that.
Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Sure, thanks.
Sarah Lloyd runs a 400-cow dairy, the Nelson Family Dairy Farm, just outside of the Dells. She's vice president of the Columbia County Farmers Union. Just ahead, we discuss how last week's election decriminalized the possession of hard drugs in Oregon. A drug reform advocate and a public health expert explains. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.